The next case is in the matter of the welfare of the child of JRHT and PJ parents. And I will just note that this is a panel of three judges. Counsel, we heard from you earlier this morning. Judge Ross is continuing to participate in the case. He has read the briefs and will join our conference. However, due to a family medical situation, he had to excuse himself from this argument. The argument is being recorded and will be made available to him to watch before we have our conference, but he will not be present with us asking questions this morning. Given that you appeared before us earlier, I think you're pretty familiar with the rules here, and we can get started with your arguments. Again, I just remind you to identify yourselves and the party that you're representing before you begin. And we'll start with counsel for the appellant.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ann Carlson, and I represent the appellant mother, JRHT. We are asking that this court would reverse the district court's order terminating her parental rights and remand with instructions to facilitate reunification in the form of giving mother a case plan, including frequent visitation and an opportunity to demonstrate compliance with that case plan. This case is, to me, comes down to two things: the timelines and visitation. And I understand that over the past year and a half, timeliness has been a struggle in a lot of courts, not just in the state of Minnesota, obviously. But the way I read the timelines and the judicial, or rather the legislative intent behind the timelines, is we want to have a trial within 60 days, because if that happens, then the court can order the parent to start complying with services, including chemical dependency treatment. One of the bigger hurdles in guiding parents in child protection cases is that a symptom of chemical dependency is a denial of the fact that you are chemically dependent. And a person is not necessarily always thrilled to come into court and, after a parent's child has been removed, and acknowledge that their chemical dependency has any sort of bearing on their ability to care for the child. That's why the trial should happen within 60 days. Admittedly, that specific concern is not properly before this court. But I bring it up because I think that the timeliness of the events that transpired here, it was a series of one unfortunate event that compounded the next. Mother was denied visitation up until she demonstrated that, she was denied visitation throughout the duration of the proceedings. Denying visitation is going to be discouraging towards a parent that's working to reunify with his or her child. The statute requires that a parent would be given visitation between the emergency protective care hearing and the adjudication. Or if you're not going to give a parent visitation, it needs to be based on findings that would be detrimental to the child's health and well-being. I'm concerned here with this order, where the district court frequently references the fact that mother did not participate in visitation throughout the beginning stages of the proceedings prior to the adjudication. And then once the child was adjudicated, mother asked for visitation and the agency refused to facilitate it based on the recommendation of the child's therapist. Unfortunately, we can't turn back time, but to me, it seems that the agency's actions had a detrimental effect on the parent-child relationship in a way that one would expect if a child was not able or allowed to have contact with a parent for a period of several months. Prior to having one visitation, having some reaction to that visitation, and then the agency continuing to deny visitation after the fact. I believe the timelines are meant to give a person a sufficient amount of time, not only to address their chemical dependency, but also to reach the conclusion that they are, in fact, chemically dependent. And a struggle that parents have in the child protection system is acknowledging that that problem exists. So it seems especially daunting to ask a parent that you have taken a child away from to start demonstrating sobriety when that parent is not one that has reason to believe that his or her chemical use impacts his or her ability to care for the child. You're starting off this relationship in a defensive manner and continuing it that way. Judge Riley?
Thank you. You can tell that you're an experienced appellate Zoom lawyer at this point. So at the time of the trial, the child had been in out-of-home placement for 390 days. And the judge noted that, and other people who testified noted what a long time that was for this child. And I'm looking at paragraph 88 of the judge's order, findings of facts, bottom of page 11. And the judge writes, maybe the single most important fact in this case is that for a large portion of the time that the child was out of home, the mother did nothing. And goes on, the judge commends her that now at the time of trial, so 390 days over a year later, she understands her addiction inability to accept responsibility made it difficult for her to engage in the services. It's like she got started too late, is how I read the judge's order. I just was wondering if you'd comment on those findings. And the judge is concerned about the trauma to the child.
Well, Your Honor, I would agree that the judge is finding that mother did get around to starting to address some of the issues, but that it happened too late. And that ties into some of my timeliness arguments, that she wasn't ordered to follow through with any of the recommendations that she comply with chemical dependency services until August 31st of 2020. And this court is aware that when terminating parental rights, the court has to look at a condition that exists at the time of the trial. And the respondent and the district court are very heavily focused on what led up to the CHIPS adjudication. There seems to be a recitation of all the evidence that brought this case before the court, and very little credit to the fact that mother did start complying with what was asked of her with the court-ordered case plan. She did get into chemical dependency treatment. She was doing well in chemical dependency treatment in her step-down program at the time that the trial occurred. And I understand the court's concern was that a long period of time, there was a long period of time before she got engaged, but there was also a long period of time before the adjudication happened. So during that period of time, everything that she would have done, including demonstrating sobriety in the form of complying with drug testing solutions, would have been voluntary and based on her own volition and not based on the court's authority to order her to work towards reunifying with the child. I mean, to me, it compounds matters and makes matters much worse. You know, that after she finally starts to get moving towards reunification, the agency refuses to allow her to have contact with the child based on the fact that, well, now, you know, the child is having a reaction to her without the child knowing that the reason that she didn't have visitation for the past several months was that Otter Tail County canceled every single visitation based on its understanding that the court had ordered that mother was not allowed to have visitation unless she demonstrated sobriety. I can only imagine how many cases this court would hear if every parent that didn't demonstrate sobriety between the time of the child's removal and the time of the case going to a termination of parental rights proceeding, if the parent was not allowed to have visitation to maintain that bond. The bond that the parent maintains is a large part of what motivates the parent to continue to work towards reunification. And in this case, the system defeated its purpose. The purpose is to assist a parent in becoming situated in their ability to provide a safe, stable, permanent home for their child. And the purpose is to give them the assistance, including services that might allow them to be better situated to be their child's permanent care provider. The law has a very strong preference for a parent continuing to care for the child, and the system exists so that we can assist parents in getting there. Here, it seems that the parent understandably is discouraged by the fact that the assistance that she's getting is the agency telling her you're not going to be able to see your child. And continuing to not allow her to see her child from the EPC until the TPR. So the court has to look at conditions that exist at the time of the trial. At the time of the trial, mother was in a treatment facility that the child could have been placed in.
One concern that I have, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I guess I'd like you to address this, is that certainly there was a delay in getting treatment and succeeding in treatment, but I also believe the record indicates that the prognosis, if that's the correct term to use in the drug treatment setting, is somewhat guarded. What was the district court to do with that information in assessing, sort of where things stood at the time of the trial?
And this really is an argument that brings me back to the timelines here and how the timelines were not adhered to in a manner that gels with the rules of juvenile protection procedure. My read of the case is that child gets removed in February. The adjudication happens at the end of August. Mother starts complying with the case plan in October. That's when she gets the chemical dependence, completes her Rule 25 assessment, and then starts treatment in November. Shortly thereafter, maybe a week or so after, the agency files a TPR petition. And from the time that she starts treatment in November up until the time of the trial, mother does demonstrate compliance with what is being asked of her, or at least what she's being allowed to demonstrate. I mean, she can only do so much of this case plan while she is in chemical dependency treatment. And the overarching concern that the agency had at the time of removal, it seems to me, was mother's use. The agency dings her for not being able to comply with certain aspects of the case plan that she wouldn't have been able to comply with because she was complying with chemical dependency treatment, which was the overarching concern. What I'm seeing here, and I understand these delays are happening, but it seems that leeway is being given to the district court when it comes to these delays, and leeway is not being given to the parents when it comes to these delays. I understand that the statute requires that the agency would file a permanency petition at 11 months, and I also understand that there's a reason that we want to have timely trials in child protection matters, that we want to have an adjudication within 60 days of the child's removal from the home, because that would give a parent roughly 10 months to demonstrate that they are willing and able and have a desire to do what they need to do to reunify with the child. In this case, mother was given 3 months before there was a TPR petition.
I might disagree with you there. Not to hearken back to my 7 years I spent in Hennepin County Juvenile Court, but oftentimes when a child was removed from a parent, that was the wake-up call that they needed to start dealing with their issues. It wasn't the wake-up call for your client in this case. And in fact, so February to August before the adjudication on CHIPS, and then she doesn't hop on a Rule 25 immediately. And I know that denial is a big part of addiction. And then it's not until November that she finally enters treatment, but not before she has one last freebie with her drug use right before entering treatment. So the timeline, she could have done something, but she didn't. And this child is under the age of 8 at the time. And so the statute requires the filing of permanency petition. I don't know if you want to respond to that.
And to be clear, I'm aware of the fact that there had to be a permanency petition filed, and I'm not arguing with the fact that a permanency petition had to be filed. Whether it's easy from the outside looking in to say that the correct wake-up call that should be when a parent starts to respond is the moment that the child gets removed. But in reality, that is usually a moment that a parent is very defensive about the fact that the child, as far as the parent was concerned, was receiving proper parental care. A struggle that parent attorneys and social workers share is that we aren't chemical dependency counselors. And scheduling this Rule 25 assessment, and I would say the same for the district court, you know, getting this Rule 25 assessment scheduled when you have a parent that is not yet in agreement with the fact that he or she struggles with chemical dependencies is a daunting task. And you're asking a parent to trust individuals that come into their life at a time that is clearly going to be very emotionally distraught. The government just took a child from your care and removed that child from you, and now the government is asking you to trust the people that removed your child in telling you what it is that would be best for the child that you know better than they do. I understand why the delay happened in this case. I don't understand why, and if I could briefly finish, I also understand that the delay, most likely, based on my reading of this record, discouraged mother. In that it created this adversarial relationship where there should have been a relationship that was supportive of mother getting into chemical dependency treatment. It diminished her motivation to reunify because it destroyed the bond that she had with child. I am asking that this court would reverse the district court's order terminating mother's parental rights and remand with instructions to give a reasonable case plan, including frequent ongoing visitation as required by statute. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carlson. And you will have 5 minutes to address us in rebuttal. Next, we will hear from Ms. Scherr. You may proceed.
Thank you, Kathleen Scherr, on behalf of Otter Tail County Department of Human Services, the agency. May it please the court, I'm going to jump right into what I think are the biggest issues in this case that have been addressed by Ms. Carlson, have to do with the visitation itself and the timelines in this case. And I would agree that it's very hard from the outside looking in. I don't say that with any disrespect for this court, as I'm very respectful of the court and the difficulty of the job that this court has. But I think that is a reason why there is such discretion that is given to the judicial court itself. The judge that handled this court this hearing from the very beginning throughout the case. Now, delays in the adjudication itself were largely due to COVID. As the court can see, this original trial in this case was scheduled to start on April 16th, which, as this court is aware, is shortly after the order from Justice Gildea came down indicating that we were not to be holding trials. And then shortly after that got directive that timelines still existed, whether there was COVID or not. And so there was a struggle with the district court in even getting this scheduled, and then further delays when defense attorney ended up with COVID themselves. And so this matter was not rescheduled until August due to delays with making sure that mother had adequate counsel that was familiar with the case in order to assist her. And so that was in large part the delays that occurred in this case. I would point out that due to the age of the child in this case, we would have been at 180 days right around that August period. And the agency delayed filing and made it very clear to the court that they were requesting the court to extend timelines in order to give mother time to comply with that court order, despite the fact that we were at that permanency progress review hearing. And mother continued to not comply. There was various times that she was offered for a CD evaluation to be ordered, and she chose not to comply with that and chose not to engage in the services. Now, the record does reflect the struggle the agency had with trying to get in communication with mother and with her responding to that. Now, Ms. Carlson indicated that mother had requested visitation several times prior to the adjudication occurred, which is simply not what the record indicates. Mother indicated she wanted visitation at the first admit-deny hearing that would have been held in March of 2020. And then mother also asked for visitation in June of 2020. Other than that, there wasn't any request until after there was we got to the adjudication hearing. Mother simply stepped in and really wasn't complying with anything at that point. Now, the other real big topic, I think, in this case is the visitation itself and the court ordering that mother should not have visitation unless there was compliance with controlled substances. And as this court is aware from reading the adjudication order, as well as the termination of parental rights, there was a big controversy in this case over the child appearing after being relinquished to the agency with a shaved head and eyebrows. And the court was very disturbed and made his feelings very clear on the record at the second EPC hearing about his concern with mother allowing this to happen and even directing this to happen. And that is also addressed in the adjudication order and the court finding that she's not credible in her testimony and believing in large part that she directed this to happen. The court makes findings that believes that the child would suffer imminent danger if returned to the care of mother, and on that basis restricts the visitation. I think based both on chemical dependency as well as concerns about her decision-making and endangering the child. Now, it's true that this controversy continued right into the time of trial. There was a lot of focus on mother in her testimony with going back and trying to refute how this head shaving had happened. And I think that was wasted time for the court at that point as the court also found her not to be credible during the testimony at trial. Now, as we've heard with regard to mother's chemical dependency, there is also evidence from her first treatment provider that she was not engaging in treatment. She entered into treatment in November of 2020, and there's a testimony from challenged treatment provider that does indicate that it wasn't until mid-December when she had a come to Jesus talk with mother. You're not progressing. You're not completing the homework. You're not engaging in groups. And unless you're willing to do that, you are going to be unsuccessfully discharged. And it wasn't until that point in mid-January that we're looking at mother starting to comply in getting her homework done and engaging in groups. This is only 3 weeks before she's discharged to her aftercare treatment placement. I think the court is very reasonable in their questioning whether she's truly taking in all of the chemical dependency resources she can and whether she truly is addressing her chemical dependency issues.
Let me ask you this question. You agree with Ms. Carlson that the record does not support the finding that mother abandoned the child?
I agree with that, Judge, in the aspect that as at the time of trial, no, I do not agree that she had abandoned the child.
Then the judge found some other statutory bases for terminating mother's rights. Which of those do you think is strongest?
I would argue that the strongest is probably her failure to engage in reasonable efforts to rectify the problems that led to the out-of-home placement. I would assert the chemical dependency treatment, although she engaged loosely in the chemical dependency treatment, I think it was pretty clear at the time of trial that she had not addressed those issues, that she was still actively working at those. And I also don't buy the argument that the judge was only, or that the child was having struggles with visitation with mother due to the long period of not having visitation. I think the record is very strong with regard to child's mental health therapist and the he was receiving. There was obviously some trauma that he had sustained due to the living environment with mother and mother passing him around even before the agency was involved. There's significant testimony both at the adjudication trial and at the trial itself that mother was frequently leaving him for weeks at a time with various people. Some of those people that are alleged have actually shaved his head and eyebrows on behalf of mother. And so there's also a question there. Yes, Judge.
So, Ms. Scherr, just to hit you with Ms. Carlson's argument that this court really, in the district court, needs to be laser focused on the situation at the time of trial, what I'm hearing is a lot of references to conduct that occurred in the past. Given the circumstances at the time of the trial, could the district court reasonably conclude that mother had failed to rectify the situation that resulted in the adjudication?
Absolutely. And I think the strongest testimony of that comes from the testimony surrounding both the child's therapist and in the child's engagement with mother when there was visitation occurring. And I'll just slip in there that the agency, when mother did go to treatment, the agency was not denying visitation. Due to COVID, the facility was not allowing visitation, and that's in the record. That they actually broke the rules the first time in allowing mother to have that visitation. And the child's therapist provided significant testimony that had she been consulted, she would not have supported visitation with mother due to child's trauma. And I think that it's not only evident with the therapist's testimony, but also the relative caretaker's testimony as well, that she had observed these visits. And although the visits seemed to be going better, there was still question about mother's conduct with child and appropriateness of that conduct. Specifically asking questions over and over, asking questions about what the child was talking about in therapy. And I don't think you can categorize that as mother being interested in the child's therapy, but rather mother prodding child and trying to get information from child. I does that answer your question? Okay. Now, I am asking the court to find that the district court in their discretion did make appropriate findings that visitation between mother and child was not appropriate at this point. I think that the reliance on the mental health experts is something that this court has, and the district court especially, has used in support of making that decision and relying on the experts, just the way that we would rely on chemical dependency treatment providers to determine whether a person is truly engaging in chemical dependency or not. And I think both of those things are very clear on this record, that the chemical dependency treatment people did not believe that mother had been really complying for very long, or that she had truly addressed those issues. I would just ask the court to affirm the termination in this case and ask that we be allowed to move forward with permanency in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Scherr. Ms. Carlson, let's get our clock reset here. All right, you may have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. For the record, this is Ann Carlson. I represent appellant mother JRHT. I keep seeing and hearing these arguments about the shaved head and the eyebrows and the speculation that the shaved head and the eyebrows caused so much trauma that child was not going to be able to have any sort of visitation with the mother, or the visitation couldn't have been facilitated because the treatment center didn't allow visitation. And the timeline here just doesn't add up. I understand that COVID did prevent in-person visitation for a number of families. And I also understand that many agencies over the state of, throughout the state of Minnesota and elsewhere, I'm sure, at the very least, facilitated electronic visitation or some sort of Zoom or Skype, something that would allow the mother and the child to maintain a parental bond. It's unclear to me why that didn't happen here, other than there seems to be some frustration on behalf of the county and the court towards the mother for not eagerly addressing the issues that it has with her parenting as quickly as the county and the court would have liked her to. The respondent is arguing that the strongest statutory basis to support a termination of parental rights is failure to correct Minnesota Statute 260C.301 sub 151B5. And that is a statutory basis that requires that the agency would make reasonable efforts to reunify the family. Reasonable efforts is an exercise of due diligence to do all things possible to reunify the family. And one of the key components of reasonable efforts in every child protection case is providing visitation so that the familial relationship can continue, so that the bond can continue, so that you're not destroying the bond. I'm not comfortable speculating to the fact that the child's trauma was entirely due to mother's actions or the head shaving that happened months before the adjudication. What I am wanting to do is focus on the fact that mother did comply with chemical dependency treatment. And if that come to Jesus meeting, as referred to by a respondent, happened at all, then that was the purpose of child protection getting involved. The purpose is to assist the parent in becoming better able to care for the child and to allow the parent to get the services in place that he or she may need that would allow him or her to provide a safe, stable home. I'm asking this court would reverse the district court's order because the damage to the relationship between the mother and child was in large part and in ways that we certainly can't quantify due to the fact that the agency did not allow visitation throughout the course of the year and that only the visitation was only facilitated twice. I think the agency erred in deferring to the child's therapist when there's a statutory mandate that a parent be given visitation unless there's findings made at the adjudication that visitation would be permanently detrimental to the health and welfare of the child. The agency here, in denying visitation, did not make reasonable efforts towards reunification. If the agency is not following through with the statutory mandate, 260C.201(5), then I don't see how they can comply with 260.012, reasonable efforts towards reunification. Because the agency didn't make reasonable efforts towards reunification, because the district court's findings fail to adequately conform with the statutory criteria, because the findings are not supported by sufficient evidence, I am asking that this court would reverse the order terminating mother's parental rights. And I am asking that this court would remand with instructions to provide mother with a realistic case plan, a sufficient amount of time to comply with it, and frequent ongoing visitation. Thank you.
Okay, that concludes the arguments in this matter. Thank you to both counsel for your very helpful remarks this morning.